And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, I know you don't like to speculate, but I want to ask you something. Do you think that Donald Trump will ever get convicted of a criminal offense, or will ever go to jail, or will ever pay any of the damages that he's being assessed in civil courts?
Well, those are three different questions.
Okay, I'll ask you three questions.
Okay. Do you want to start with the criminal or the civil?
I don't care.
The criminal, there are good shots at him on a couple of the cases. The Georgia case and the case in Florida, but there are impediments on those. It depends if they can get to trial or when they can get to trial and whether or not, of course, he becomes the president.
I think there's another impediment. I think that in a place like Florida and certainly Georgia, the chances that there's not going to be one member of the jury pool who's an avowed Trumpist that keeps his mouth shut about it and decides that it's his mission in life to make sure Trump doesn't get convicted are enormous. Statistics, I'm sure, would show that that's very likely.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll just have to see. And you have to see how things play out. Whether there's going to be any additional guilty pleas coming in. Don't forget, in Georgia, they've already gotten a whole bunch of guilty pleas.
Yeah, but that doesn't...
But they didn't send anybody to jail.
Right.
They didn't send anybody to jail yet. But and if he is convicted, sending an ex-president to jail where he has to have Secret Service protected or something. So he might wind up in some sort of a house arrest situation. Well,
Is that conceivable that that'll happen to Trump? To me, it's inconceivable.
Well, we'll find out. We'll find out, and then we have the case in Washington as well. So,
yeah.
And who knows what else is going to come out? But
all right. So then
by the time we get to that, we might have a diminished capacity defense that he can't even the way his mental status is going, especially.
Yeah, but do you really think that if he was a mumbler, let's assume that he got to the point where all he could do was mumble, do you think anybody would notice? Don't you think they would cover it up?
Well, they can't cover it up anymore. When he gets out there, they're now starting to put that stuff together. And instead of the concentration being on Joe Biden's mental acuity, they're starting now to focus in on Trump's because it's gotten to be so apparent and so frequent. We'll just have to see it, of course.
Well, that's what Haley is doing. What if Haley stops doing it? What if Haley if she didn't do it?
Well, that's the interesting thing. There's so many dimensions to this race with Haley and Trump going on. We just had a primary and first primary, and Trump was... Technically, he was successful, but the revisionist political analyses now are working against Trump. Now, instead of him being the inevitable and being the formidable, now they're saying, this has exposed his weaknesses. He did not get, an overwhelming amount. And don't forget New Hampshire is a much more moderate state than Iowa is. And when you looked at the way the independents broke, and the fact of the matter is that Biden carried it by something like 7 points last time, and it appears that he would be in the same position this time. He wasn't on the ballot, and he still got 60-some percent of the vote just on write-in.
But the states that count, as you and I both know, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, well, New Hampshire has some count to it. Has some count to it because it kind of. I always kind of as a predictor, if Trump were to win New Hampshire or to be a razor thin thing, then that the rest of the country is probably going to be a very, very tight race and not parallel what happened last time. So,
well, all right, look at Pennsylvania then. But yeah. What do you think would be the breakout of independents in Pennsylvania? Are they going to sit it out or vote for Biden or stay with Trump?
I think the closer you get to the election, the more they break towards Biden. But again, there's a lot that can happen.
They really just have to not vote.
Well, understood. But you still have this women's vote in the Philadelphia suburbs, and they're still animated by the abortion issue, very much so. And now they're doubly animated because of the way he's treated E. Jean Carroll. And so you have that that thing going for you, or for him there. And that's a pretty big deal. And the way, you know, Trump's, you know, his statements are being, you know, much more extremist. The more problems he runs into, the more extreme he gets. You'll just have to see how well the Biden campaign is able to capitalize on that. But they have things to work with. This week we had that notice where Biden and the Democrats in the Senate, with the Republicans on a bipartisan basis, had worked out some sort of a deal on immigration. And Trump called up his toady and as the Speaker of the House and said, no way should we ever approve this. And even some senators he called up and says, don't vote for this. And for Trump, that was a lose-lose situation. If the bill got passed in a bipartisan manner, Biden gets credit. If it doesn't get passed, it gives Biden a chance to point the finger at Trump. Remember, in this election, as in the last couple of elections, the question is, who's the focus on? Trump won because he kept the focus on Hillary and her problems. Biden won because he kept the focus on Trump and his problems. The Trump people in this election were going to try to keep the focus on Biden, but that's slipping away. People are starting to say, they're starting to remember that the Trump years weren't the good old days that Trump has been trying to promote, that they were the days of chaos, and they don't like that. And so that's how that election, I think, is set to play out. But again, there's a lot of time between now, we're almost in February, and November. You got nine months.
So how important do you think this immigration issue is going to be?
It's still a big issue. I still hear it from people, from Democrats, all the time, that it is a big issue. And but the question, like I said, I think Biden has made a move to try to neutralize it. It breaks against the Democrats. The governor of Texas really pulled some shrewd things out when he started sending busloads and plane loads of people to blue states and to blue cities. And you saw the reaction from blue mayors and blue governors, which nationalized that issue. You know, I mean, New Hampshire is pretty far away from Mexico. Of course, they've got a border with Canada, but nobody is bothered by immigration from Canada. They're all bothered by immigration from Mexico. And because the numbers are so great, and there just doesn't seem to be any way to control that. So it is a major issue, but it can be turned against the Republicans somewhat, or neutralized somewhat by the stance that we don't want to do anything. You know, Trump is going to come out, and what he's come out and said is, well, it's not a perfect bill. And, you know, I can give you a perfect bill. And the Democrats are going to come out and say, yeah, like you gave us a perfect bill for health care. You had nothing. You just wanted to take health care away from people. You didn't have a perfect bill for infrastructure. You had nothing. And Joe Biden got that done. So there's ways of doing this. There's ways of doing this. And I think that's some of the undertones that you're going to see. But don't the Democrats can't put their head in the sand or head in the Rio Grande and pretend it doesn't exist. It's still a, you know, a big issue.
But it strikes me that the Democrats basically concede to the Trump point that immigration should be stopped. The deal that I read about was that the Democrats accepted was a deal that, as Biden said, I will stop immigration dead. That's the Republican talking point. Why should any human being wish to stop immigration dead? There'd be no human race if immigration didn't exist.
Understood. And that's why the Republican senators that forged this bill are going around saying we're not going to get a better deal than this.
That's right.
Tom Tillis and Lankford that worked on it.
And McCormick.
Joni Ernst. They all said it was a good deal. Biden's pitch will be, look, let's do this, and then we can modify it later.
It's impossible to modify it later, because the basis of the deal is that there shouldn't be immigration. And that's a different worldview. What you're saying is there shouldn't be immigration, but we should tinker with it, so there'd be a trickle of immigration.
Don't forget, there's we've got millions of people already in the country.
We've got 12 million people in the country. We need more. We don't have enough domestic workers. And in any case, the solution to the problem is twofold. The first aspect of the solution is make Central America a better place for the people who live in Central America. You got the resources to do that. And all you got to do really is send those resources and help those domestic political forces in Latin America that don't want their countries dominated by gangsters, by drug cartels, by thieves and goons of every sort and description. You can do that.
That's part of the thing. And, of course, the Republican response to that has always been, we have our own problems here.
Yes, but that's a big part of the problem.
Well,
the second aspect of it is,
of
course they don't. That's them. Because they benefit. After all, Central America was always dominated and was known to be dominated by American companies. United Fruit was the big boogeyman that dominated Central America to the distress of the people who lived in Central America.
Yeah, John Foster Dulles.
Yeah. The other aspect of it is unionization. You don't want workers to work for low wages. Make every worker a member of a union. Support and expand unionization. You got 6% of the workforce, the private workforce, in unions. Why shouldn't you have 60%? If everybody was a member of a union that was getting the same wage and it was a living wage, it wouldn't matter to anybody who was coming here. So the whole attitude toward the issue is, a world apart. But Biden has accepted the Republican approach to the issue and is trying to ameliorate it. What I'm saying is the Democrats need to have a human, pro-immigrant approach to the issue, one that parallels everybody's attitude toward the migration of capital. After all, if you try to prevent the migration of capital, all of a sudden it seems like God has abdicated.
Well, two things. One is that's not where the American public is.
No, but the point of the party is it's supposed to lead the public, right?
Yeah, I understand that. You can't get way too far ahead of it. And number two is, I think the Democrats don't want that to be the lead issue. I think they have plans for other things to be the lead issue.
Yeah, abortion, right?
Abortion, the environment.
Where are they leading on the environment?
Well, they've put in certain things. Look at this week with Biden has stopped the LNG.
The terminals. That's right. Terminals. That's right. I saw that
he does things.
Right. But here we are in Pennsylvania, which is a leading natural gas producer, maybe the leading natural gas producer, certainly up there with Wyoming and Texas. Have you ever heard the Democratic Party in this state come out against fracking? But everybody in the world who's concerned with the climate crisis is against fracking. but not one Democrat. Why? Oh, we won't win votes. We'll lose votes. We'll lose working class. There are the fracking industry in this state keeps claiming about what a wonderful thing they've done in terms of jobs and income and building up the state. They don't get taxed. They don't make any contribution to the state. And the jobs they claim that they created is a lie.
Well, that's my son's thesis. And
he took it from the statistics of the Labor Department of Pennsylvania.
Right. But they see it from a different angle on this. People see it from an energy angle. They want cheaper energy. And they see gas as being a cheaper and still a cleaner form than coal.
It isn't cleaner. It's only cleaner at the point of burning. It's just as dirty and maybe more dirty.
Well, because there's no control on the methanes. By the way, I don't know if you saw it this week, at the end of the week, the Shapiro administration said that the fracking companies are going to have to divulge publicly the chemicals that they use. That hadn't been
as a proprietary trade secret.
Yeah, well, that's going to change in Pennsylvania, although it's probably going to get litigated in the courts. But again, the Republicans wouldn't do any of that. So that's the tension there on those.
I mean, do you know that there was a time, and it was not so long ago, that they were using this liquid that was coming up after they used it to frack the thing, and which everybody knew was radioactive. They used it to spray on the roads to dampen down the dust. Can you believe this? They're spraying radioactive liquid to dampen down the dust. I'd rather have the dust.
You know, at least they could get it to glow at night so it can make it safe.
You'll glow.
You'll glow. Well, yeah, the tires will glow.
Yeah.
By the way, when we talk about fracking, one of the things is that they don't recapture the methane that's released, and that's part of the problem at the wellhead,
and at the compressor stations.
Yeah,
I mean, I live surrounded by compressor stations. You can feel the difference in the air. You can feel it. Mm. I don't need a meter. Walk the dog, you'll know it.
All right. But let me just go to a couple of the other issues on the campaign, and I think. When we talk about the abortion issue, it's expanded now. It's the anti-woman issue. And Trump is playing that card. He tried to, you know, at one hand, he goes around bragging that he's the one that got rid of Roe v. Wade. On the other hand, he was trying to tack more centrist on this, saying, well, a six-week ban on abortion is too strict. But he's going around now, he's got this issue with Nikki Haley. And as he does with any woman who challenges him, he becomes very personal and nasty about it. And that sort of doubles down on, it's no longer just about abortion, it's about misogyny. And I think women feel that. One comment that I heard was that when it comes to a running mate, despite what all the kissing that Tim Scott and Vivek Ramaswamy did, that he's going to have to now pick a woman as a running mate because of his how extreme his stance has been against Nikki Haley and now against E. Jean Carroll.
So who's the woman? Stefanik?
Oh, I still think Stefanik is the lead. Noam probably is in second place. Mark Halpern, the political pundit, is promoting this state legislator from either South Carolina or Florida she can't be from Florida. I think South Carolina would be Brett. I never heard of her, you know. And he might just pick someone out of the blue that we haven't heard of. I doubt if it's going to be Carrie Lake because I don't think he can control her. And that's one of the things that we saw, that the Trump's personality, he is a control freak, and he wants to be able not only to control, but to bully anybody. And he can't do that in courts of law. where he has judges, except for Eileen Cannon, where he has judges who are know how to be judges and impose the rules of court on him and work to keep him in line. And you know that, and his tantrums just don't play well. We saw what happened with that jury in New York. You know, the more he said, the more cha-ching went into E. Jean Carroll's pocket on that. And we're not finished with that yet.
You know, do you think that it was Trump's doing that, or do you think it was the fact that Lynn Harbor is just a terrible lawyer?
Well, it's a combination of both, but don't forget, Trump gets the kind of lawyers that he wants. He wants lawyers that he can control, that he will dictate to. Eileen Haba was playing to a jury of one to him instead of to the nine men and women on that jury. And it fails. But Trump, this is all about assuaging Trump's ego and playing, at least perceptively, playing to his base through making him a victim.
Well, he may be right about that. He, you know, I mean, if he figures that he can forestall any kind of collection activity or any kind of ultimate having to, you know, be punished for if he gets found guilty, then or if it doesn't matter to him, then, you know, the political aspect maybe is the most important.
Yeah. You know, civilly, we're not talking politically, but civilly, truth seems to matter. We've had in the past couple of years, look at all these verdicts. We had the our settlements. The Smartmatic settlement for $787.5 million against Fox. We have Rudy Giuliani, $148 million, by the two women in Georgia who he defamed. We had Alex Jones, $1.5 billion, from the families up there in Connecticut, and now Trump, $83 million. Well, it's going to be 88 because he already had.
Well,
five
he has million. 5 million, right?
Yeah, so it's 88 million. You know, lying doesn't necessarily pay. We still have that. I'm sorry, it was Dominion was the lawsuit. Smartmatic's lawsuit is still going to go, and that's for more money against Fox. You know, lying doesn't pay. Plus, it hasn't paid for a lot of these Trump lawyers who played to him. Lost their licenses and things, or you know, or lost their jobs. John Eastman, Sidney Powell. We already mentioned Rudy. We've got
Chesbro.
Jeffrey Clark, Cleta Mitchell. All of these folks. It doesn't pay to be on the Trump team. It's great while you're.
Well, if you're a lawyer, it doesn't pay.
It doesn't pay. Well, of course, he doesn't pay most of his lawyers. And then you see the ones that have had him and have backed away from him. Like you see Ty Cobb on TV now talking about that. And his loyalists. I've been keeping, wherever I can, sort of like a little file on all of the ex-Trump people who were in his administration or worked for him and what they're saying about him now. You know, you talk about John Kelly, Mark Esper, Bill Barr.
But these are all losers. Well, what we need to pay attention to is the plentitude of winners like Stephen Miller.
Well, Miller is certainly a problem. Bannon is still out there. By the way, this week, Peter Navarro got a jail sentence for four months.
Right. And, Bannon, by the way, you know, just is pleading that he shouldn't have to turn over his financial records because they might contain evidence of his embezzlement.
Yeah, right.
What a defense.
Yeah. Well, Fifth Amendment may be a good defense for him there, but it's sort of saying, you know, guilty. But you can't use it against me.
Well, that's exactly what he's saying. It is what he's saying, right?
Yeah. And a lot of times it depends on who's playing offense and who's playing defense. You know, we have this situation down in Texas. I mentioned about moving the immigrants. But now we have the situation with the blocking of the entry places where Governor Abbott has ordered his his people to put up razor wire and all sorts of barricades. And the federal government says you can't do that because this is a federal issue. And there was a case a couple of years ago that said that it's a federal issue, but it went back to the Supreme Court. And the decision came back in favor of the Biden administration, but it was only 5-4.
But Abbott had a good response to that,
which is,
screw you, Supreme Court. I'm not doing it.
Right. The nullification defense.
And then he got 19 Republican governors to agree to send National Guard troops to help him.
Right.
So what if the federal government federalizes the National Guard troops?
Yeah.
We're going to have Texas Rangers shooting it out with the federal troops?
Well, we'll have to see. Remember Dwight Eisenhower nationalized the Guard in Arkansas, and they had to integrate the schools. Well, it's a different era right now. I'll tell you, it's a different era, but we'll see.
Can you recall a time when 20 states agreed to mobilize their National Guard against the Supreme Court? That's what, in effect, that's what's happened.
In effect, yeah, it is against the Supreme Court, but they say it's against the overreach of the national government, the tyranny, and we're...
Yeah, but that's okay, because they also say that the Civil War was about states' rights.
Yeah. Well, that's the John C. Calhoun
thing. Yeah.
They still, they still won't admit that it's about slavery. Remember Nikki Haley?
Right.
That got her in trouble there, dancing around this job.
But this is a serious matter, Texas versus...
Oh, it is a very serious matter. Yeah. You know, we had Alabama, which wouldn't redistrict according to Supreme Court rulings. And, but the fact of the matter is that they got four Supreme Court justices that are willing to go along with this. Is really dangerous. The one that people can't figure out is Kavanaugh. And there was an article this week somewhere where he seems to have been tacking farther and farther to the right after staying with Roberts on more centrist ideas or less farther right ideas. He seems to now be going with Gorsuch and Alito and Thomas. So, but we'll have to see how those things play out.
Well, Coney Barrett is interesting because she's been sort of lining up with Roberts.
Yes,
and if anybody is a straight down the line right wing Catholic politician, she is.
Yeah, but she's also more of an institutionalist. Catholics are institutionalists in some ways, and I don't think we should leave without mentioning the blooper that Dave McCormick, this week was quoted as saying that, something to the effect, I don't have it in front of me, but that he's been courting the rich people, seeking their money for his campaign against Bob Casey. We can be sure we're going to be seeing and hearing a lot more about that quote as the campaign heats up.
His point was that... you'll all be rich when I'm senator, so you shouldn't object to my reaching out to the rich people.
You'll be richer. Like, we'll give you more tax breaks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, all right. This was interesting.
Yeah.
And what do we got coming up next week?
Yeah, I don't. There are two things that we don't have coming up quickly. Florida legislator wanted to have a state law that would help take taxpayer money to pay for Donald Trump's legal fees. And there was also the RNC wanted to declare Trump the presumptive nominee. And both of those things, those trial balloons, went by the wayside. Probably because the second thing, probably because all the Republicans in the 48 states that haven't picked had a primary or caucus yet don't want to become meaningless to the Republican Party.
There's something in there to talk about, the significance of primaries for party state organizations.
Yes, we'll have to do that.
We'll talk about it next week.
Well,
see you next week.
See you next week, and we'll know the results of the groundhogs.
Ah, springtime. Okay.
Maybe.
All right. On that decisive note of maybe, we see you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.